Oh, thanks, Don. Hey, everybody. I was counting participants. All seven of you. Two of you is the radio, I think. I'm just cutting up. There's Kathy. Hi, Kathy. There's Kathy's hand. I mean, there she is. we are here for something genuine, and we're going to look at a video tonight, a TED Talk tonight, that looks at the voice in our head and kind of examines what that is, where that comes from, and some ways to think about it and deal with it. This video came up because we're also getting ready to look at that. I'm going to do a little exercise on freedom from the judge tomorrow as part of the retreat we're doing here at the retreat house. Yes, I do want you to play the song while, and we'll see if anybody else shows up, Dawn. But the reason I want to give that little bitty talk first was to explain, because it's the song is a different song, but it goes perfectly with this theme of where these thoughts in your head come from. So yeah, turn it over to Dawn to play that for me.
Sometimes it's never quite enough. If you're flawless, then you're in my love. Don't forget to win first place. Don't forget to keep that smile on your face. Be a good
wow, huh? Now, where do we get all these ideas? Whose voice is that in my head? Yeah, but that's isn't that an interesting song? And it was really sweet too, because Shauna, you just missed the song. Oh, you heard it? Oh, good. Good. It was really sweet too, because on my way down to La Vida this morning, I'm like, what should I be doing? Should I be listening to, you know, some TED Talks? Should I be? And I heard very clearly to listen to Alanis Morissette. And I'm like, really? Why? And that was why. So it was the perfect song to look at the thoughts in our head. Yeah. So I'm at Regina's. Regina's and her mother's in the guest room. Yay. Yeah, this is where I'll be camping for the week. So Dawn has graciously agreed to, hey, Tony. Tony's there. Tony and Sean are there at the retreat house. Yeah, so Dawn is playing the our video for us tonight. I'm going to recommend that you take notes, because I know it's like, this is supposed to be fun. But if you don't take some bullet point notes, then afterwards we all just sit there and look at each other and go, wow, wasn't that great? I can't remember what he said, but wasn't that great? So, I see folks getting pens and papers and whatnot. So we'll just, and there's Regina. Regina's, in a couple rooms over. And it does say that my internet connection is unstable. Are you all tracking me? Dawn, can you hear me? Yes, Dawn says yes. Okay, so Dawn's going to play our video for us. And whenever you're ready, Dawn, I will mute myself.
I like to start by making one thing very clear. I want you to know that I am absolutely, incredibly, and totally awesome. Now, before you start thinking that I have a problem with humility, which I don't, let me add something important. I believe you too are awesome. Is that better now? But I also believe, based on my research, that there is, But I also believe, based on my research, that there is an 80% probability that you have no idea how truly magnificent you really are. You used to know, but you've forgotten. I'm here to show you the science behind how you gradually forget your true self, your true potential, and how you can rediscover and unleash an even happier and more capable version of yourself, the true magnificent you. Is that cool? Great. So I lecture on this topic right here at Stanford, and my work is based on extensive research in neuroscience and psychology. I'd like to show you my most important evidence proving that you used to know how amazing you really are. Would you like to see that evidence? Well, here it is. Do you think she knows how magnificent she is? Absolutely, she is radiating with it. What about him? Do you think he knows how magnificent he is? Every strand of his hair knows how magnificent he is. And what about these two? I know they know because they are my precious kids, Tisa and Kian. The point is this: you were born as a unique and magnificent being, and you used to know it. But what about this one? Do you think he knows how magnificent he is? He actually has no clue. He used to know, but by the time this picture is taken, he no longer remembers. By the way, this is me. Adorable, right? I told you. So why and how did I begin to forget who I really am? I was born a happy kid in a troubled household. I lived with four siblings and my parents in a two-bedroom apartment in a ghetto. My father was scary, angry, and unpredictably violent. My mother was always running around terrified. I wasn't getting much love. Now, since my life was in my parents' hands, it would have been absolutely terrifying for me to admit that they were flawed. So instead, a voice started forming in my head and saying that my parents were perfect, and the reason they didn't love me was because I was unworthy of their love. I now call this voice the judge. Of course, once the judge started judging me, it also had to start judging everybody else around me so that I would be less terrified. I grew up completely unaware that this judge character was beginning to take control in my mind. I only discovered 27 years later in an MBA class right here at Stanford. We were divided into groups of 12 MBA students sitting in a circle sharing our emotions openly. One of my classmates in the circle turned to me and said nervously, "Shirza, this is really hard for me to tell you, but I often feel harshly judged by you, and it really bothers me." I turned to him and said, "John, thank you so much for telling me this. This is very helpful feedback." In the back of my mind, I was thinking, "Well, of course you feel judged by me, you idiot." "You are the biggest loser in this group." "How else do you expect me to think of you?" But then a second person, a third person, and a fourth person in the group said exactly the same thing. I kept thanking them politely while thinking, "What losers blaming me for their insecurity?" I did think like that, trust me. But somehow, the fifth person finally got through. All of a sudden I realized, oh my God, they are right. I judge everything instantly. This judge character in my head was constantly and brutally beating down not only others but myself. It was the invisible character in my head. It was the invisible lens that distorted my reality. And that discovery changed my life. Since this invisible character, judge character in my head, secretly sabotaged me, I called him a saboteur. I later discovered that in addition to the judge saboteur, there are 9 other saboteurs, like the controller, stickler, and victim. Even in a perfectly happy childhood, you still develop a couple of these saboteurs as coping mechanisms as a vulnerable kid. For example, you might develop controller tendencies to feel safer in a chaotic environment or become the victim to get more attention. The problem is that these saboteurs become the invisible masters in your head, just like my judge had. They pretend they are you, but they aren't you. That's how you forget who you really are. A war is constantly raging inside your head between your saboteurs and your original true self, whom I call your sage. These are based on entirely different regions of your brain. Your saboteurs are based on the survival brain region, which is made up mostly of the brainstem, limbic system, and parts of the left brain. Your sage is based on the positive intelligence brain, which is made up mostly of the middle prefrontal cortex, ACC insular cortex, and parts of the right brain. Here is a fascinating insight and clue to your happiness. Look at this. The survival brain region and its saboteurs are wired, are neurochemically wired to feel stress and unhappiness. They just can't help themselves. If you want to feel consistently happier, you must learn to strengthen your sage and weaken your saboteurs. It's just a matter of neurochemical science. One of the things that I can guarantee you based on my experience is that you can achieve all the great wealth and success in the world and still feel deeply unhappy because of your saboteurs. I once ran a leadership development seminar for more than 100 CEOs and presidents who were all extremely successful and looked perfectly happy on the outside. I told them, look, I have coached too many successful CEOs and billionaires to be still fooled by your facade of confidence and happiness. So I asked them to anonymously write on an index card one secret they never shared about how they really felt inside. With their permission, I'd like to read some of those cards. I am terrified of failing as the leader of my business. I am rarely at peace with myself. I fear dying of an early age from overwork and stress. I am feeling very sad and lonely, and the antidepressants I'm on don't seem to be helping. I battle with constantly ranking and judging everyone around me. I have no idea how to truly connect with my only son. My air of confidence is false. I am self-destructive and I don't know why. I don't love myself very much. I lack strength in resisting temptations and desires. I often feel like I'm a fraud. I worry my materialism is hurting my children. I have been abusing drugs and alcohol to deal with stress. I wish I could run away for 1 year, just be alone. And finally, I'm afraid of ending up like my father, who is unloved and will die alone. This is the story of our lives, folks. I have worked with people ranging from these CEOs to people on the manufacturing floor without high school diplomas. Regardless of our level of wealth or success, these saboteurs are still there tormenting us. I used to think I was particularly broken and screwed up. What a relief to discover that we are all screwed up by our saboteurs. So who are these saboteurs? In my research, I have classified the saboteurs based on their motivation for independence, acceptance, or security, and their style of assert, earn, or avoid. This grid shows the Gang of Nine saboteurs. They are controller, hyperachiever, restless, stickler, pleaser, hypervigilant, and avoider, victim, hyperrational. What a cast of characters. Everyone has the master judge saboteur in addition to at least one from this gang of nine. Now, before you are able to weaken these saboteurs, you need to be able to catch them in your head red-handed. Imagine that you're in the middle of an important project and have just learned that you've completely failed the midway milestones. Here is how some of your saboteurs in your head might be talking. Judge. Oh, I'm a loser, just a stupid loser. Everything will start crashing down now. Controller. But my way is always the right way. Someone else must have screwed up. Victim. Oh, they did it to me again. Just watch, that next lightning will be striking right here. Ow, that hurt. Stickler. I knew it. That report cover used the wrong shade of blue. Avoider. Oh, there's still plenty of time. I wonder where I should go for lunch. Hypervigilant. That's me tearing my hair out, if I still had any. And so on with the other five saboteurs. Now, once you catch a saboteur in your mind, what you want to do is just label that thought as saboteur and let it go. Instead of trusting it or pursuing it, just notice the difference between me saying, I will fail tomorrow, versus my pesky judge saboteur says I'll fail tomorrow. You feel the difference? You weaken your saboteurs by exposing and labeling them. Now, how would your sage respond in the same exact scenario? One of the most brilliant things about your sage is the sage perspective. Every outcome or circumstance can be turned into an opportunity. So you ask, how do I turn my failure in this project into an opportunity? This perspective changes everything. With this perspective, you keep your positive intelligence brain activated, which gives you access to five great sage powers. Empathize. Your sage knows that beating yourself down when you're already down is absolutely insane. So you feel compassion for yourself and others as fallible humans. This keeps you energized and positive. Explore. You become the fascinated explorer kid in the woods, turning over every rock to see what's underneath it. You become fascinated to discover all the factors contributing to your project's failure. You discover things you couldn't have seen if you were upset or defensive. Innovate. You become the innovative kid on the beach building sandcastles again. Since your positive intelligence brain is wired for creativity, you're able to take all of these discoveries about your project's failure into creative new solutions for the project. And in the interest of time, you would then navigate by choosing a direction and move into fearless, bold action. Your sage performs a lot better and remains positive even in the middle of this crisis. Now, you would only be able to perform this way if you have strong sage muscles. Functional MRI of the brain shows that one technique to build powerful sage muscles is to shift your attention to one physical sensation for 10 seconds, a few times every hour, a few reps an hour. This leads to some surprising recommendations. For example, if you want to perform better in your job, then really, really taste that bite of your crunchy apple. Really see the 100 shades of color in your friend's eyes. Or hug your loved one so attentively that you feel her heartbeat. This surprising link sounds too good to be true until you study the neuroscience evidence. So in order to track your progress, we can now actually measure the strength of your sage muscles versus your saboteurs based on your emotions in a typical 24-hour period. We have defined this ratio as your positive intelligence quotient, or PQ. Independent researchers have now shown that with increased PQ, people are far happier and less stressed. They also perform much better. For example, 40%, almost 40% better in sales, and a third better in team performance metrics. Everyone can learn to strengthen their sage muscles with a little practice. And finally, you can help strengthen the sage in your loved ones. Unlike my daughter Tisa, my son Kian loves tickling. So I have invented a game with him where I start tickling him and stop only if he gives me all the right answers. So I start tickling him and ask, Kian, why do I love you so much? He has learned to say, and he says, I don't know, Daddy, why do you love me so much? I ask, is it because you're so handsome? Now, I know it's his mother's genes, right? You don't have to tell me that. And he has learned to say, and he says, no, Daddy, it isn't because I am handsome. I ask, is it because you get good grades? No, Daddy, it isn't. Is it because you're good in sports? No, Daddy, it isn't. So I go down a long list of his great qualities, and he keeps saying, no, Daddy, it isn't. So at the end, I pretend great frustration, and I say, so why is it, Kian? Why do I love you so much? And he has learned to say, and he says, Daddy, it's because I am me. Daddy, it's because I am me. His beautiful true self, his sage. What about you? What would life be like if you fully reclaimed your beautiful true self, your sage? What would be the gift of that to you, to your loved ones, to our world? What would become possible then? You are a special, unique, and magnificent being. It's time for you to remember. Thank you. Thank you.
How about that, huh? Yeah. Yeah, wasn't that great? And I just loved, thanks. Yeah, I just loved the bookends of Alanis Morissette's opening song. You know, why aren't you perfect? Why are you crying? Well, you're not doing good enough. Try harder. It was such a nice contrast. Thank you, Inner Wisdom, Holy Spirit. Such a nice contrast with his ending and what he does with his son, Kian. You know, why do I love you? It's not because you're handsome. It's not because you make good grades. It's not because of anything that you do or say. It's because you're you. It's because you're your true self. Yeah, brought tears to my eyes. Who would like to share? Kathy, you gonna share? Uh-oh, you're muted, my dear. Now you're unmuted. Oh, you and Don are fighting each other for the mute button, I think.
Am I good now?
Yeah, you're good.
I was thinking, you know, I volunteered to take the minutes of the meeting next time the trustees have a meeting. And I haven't taken notes in a long time, so I was listening to this TED Talk and, like, rapidly trying to write things down. And, I glanced back over it. I'm thinking, oh, man, I don't know how this is going to work. But, the party started off that I certainly can relate to. This is you used to know, but you've forgotten. You used to know, but you've forgotten. And so many of our practices have been about, and even Karen Worth's meditations have been about letting go of everything that's been added on since your seeming birth into the world, you know, this innocent baby. And I love those pictures he showed of those kids. That was so cute. I mean, that was just so cute. And you can just see that innocence. And then the pile on begins. And so that's the forgetting part of it. And when he was talking about his own personal experience of how he grew up, I could certainly relate to some of the things he was saying, where, you know, when there's not that sense of safety or that sense of feeling like perfectly loved, that saboteur in the mind that starts up and says, I have a sense of safety here for you, or I can help you with what you need to do, or you know, look to me, I'm your safety. And somehow seeing that for years and years and years as me, who I am, it's my thoughts, and to know that now that none of that is mine. There's no personal idea or thought that a Kathy character somehow has stored away in this portion of her head, I guess, and it's personally hers. I mean, but yet that's what seems to go on when the attention is, I don't know. I mean, it's so weird because it's like there's not two people here. There's not a me and then this voice that I hear or pay attention to in my head. It's all me. It's all me. It's all me. But without peeling away all the layers that he was, you know, referring to, just all the add-ons. It's such a pile. It's like going into a hoarder's house, you know, trying to let all of that go to the pure essence of what I am in truth, before the body, before awareness, at one with the absolute. But without that experience, that direct experience, it's still just words, you know, it's still just words. And so still asking for the sage to show up. And I loved that idea of a sage. And let's see. The saboteur, he goes back to the saboteur, becomes the invisible master in your head, the controller, the stickler, the victim. The judge, you know, the one that starts judging everything all the time. The avoider, that was another one. Yeah, based on my motivation. What's my motivation? What's my motivation? Karen Worth this morning in meditation talked about what's permanent and what is impermanent. And motivation can be based on that. Will my attention rest with the permanent or with the impermanent? And reflecting on what the impermanent is, it's everything we experience here, everything. And so redirecting that attention inward to the sage and being directed from there, seems like really worthwhile. So I'll give up the mic with that. Thanks, guys.
That was awesome. Thank you, Kathy. That was awesome. Frankly, I think you went right to the heart of the matter. And I spent some of the time while you were talking looking for this quote that I happen to have on my computer, and I want to read it to you. It's a Michael Singer quote. It says, there is nothing more important to true growth than realizing that you are not the voice of the mind. You are the one who hears it. And you know, Kathy, you were talking about, you know, there's only one of me in here. And I'm not entirely sure that that's true. I think that there is, I think that there's a true you, the sage, he mentioned it as, and then all these protective mechanisms, they kind of like run on a tape loop that loops in the background, you know? For me, finding my distance from that voice, to be able to see that voice and go, you ain't me, as in the Revolver movie, when I'm able to do that, and I've done long stretches where I'm able to do it, and excruciating short stretches where I can't, and they're excruciating. But to the extent that I have been able to find that separation, it's made all the difference for me. It's made Eckhart Tolle said something similar to that. Till you do this, till you see that you are not that voice, you just don't make a lot of progress. He said something like that in Stillness Speaks. NTI says it in, I think it's 2 Timothy. I'm not sure I have it here. Again, it's like, that's where the, for me, that's where I started to find movement, was in my ability to separate from that voice. Because till then it was running me ragged. So I just wanted to say that you went right there. You went right to, I think, to the heart of it when you were talking about that. So thank you for your sharing. It was beautiful sharing.
I wanted to also say, you know, I know you guys have been playing games in La Vida. And I like to play games. And one of the things I've been doing, it's a game to me, is even when the mind has strayed way out of any semblance of, you know, true self and is just lost in imagination, as Reverend Meg Reinhart called it this morning, I reaffirm as soon as I notice that everything that's happening is happening within awareness. This lost mind, this lost one who seems to be imagining that I call me, all of this is really only occurring within awareness. And seeing it like a movie, as opposed to giving it any sort of like reality. And that takes some of the weight off of, like he was talking, self-judgment, yeah. Going into just like beating up on myself big time for, you know, not doing seemingly something right or you know, whatever. Just reminding myself all this is occurring like a movie within awareness. Awareness is allowing every crazy, pleasant, everything. And the part I can play best within that crazy movie is to stand back from those crazy moments and just acknowledge that and laugh and be aware in that moment. That's all I can do. I mean, that's all I can do.
That's beautiful.
That's really it. So I'm going to give up the mic.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Kathy. And you know, that reminds me of his, what he had to say about, strengthening your sage muscles, right? By tuning into a sensation in your body. I mean, he's talking about awareness, watching awareness is just so cool. You know, it's like, yes, that's what we're doing. Yeah. That's cool. Who else would like to share? Yeah, Tony.
I don't know if you can hear me. I'm a little bit further away from the mic. as he was talking, what was coming into my awareness is I have two little three-year-old granddaughters, and this gives me an opportunity to kind of like a do-over with my own parenting, with my own two children, because I know, and the conditioning, undoing the conditioning that I was raised with, and how it unconsciously just seemed to work it throughout my life. And through the path of, it, working with my spirit and purifying my mind, it gives me the chance to see how, what an impact actually going through the conditioning or the deconditioning of your mind with little kids. And I see it with their parents, the same things that I used to do with my kids, not knowing really how you're really impacting them. And I just feel so grateful that I am able to just be present with them without being impatient or judgmental with them, or making them feel like they're wrong for something. And it's just a wonderful thing. And it just totally reminded me, as soon as I saw those little baby pictures and those little kid pictures, it brought instantly into my mind of my two granddaughters and how each one of us can make a difference in, of course, our own lives and how it extends out to other people. And so I just wanted to share that with you because it really touched my heart how deeply we affect each other with our own inner growth, and especially the future of these little people. So thank you.
Lovely. Thank you for sharing, Tony. That's awesome. Yeah. And well noted. I have often thought that my son would have been a whole lot better off if he hadn't been born the day after I was turned 21. 35 would have been a much better age. Yeah, we do make a difference in that way, and we make a difference with the little people in our lives and the adults in our lives. That's why Ramana Maharshi says that the greatest gift that we can give to the world is our own awakening to our true selves.
Jacqueline, you made mention that you, at this point, know that voice in your head is not you, right?
Most days.
Yeah. For me, I can be in the quiet, and then without him, of course, you know all that, everybody knows that unconsciously we just go into the trance, and I get grabbed into it. So what was the time in your life when you said, that's not my voice? Like, what was it that... Because it is like the Holy Spirit is the same voice. It's the same voice. So it's really strange.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you that it was grace for me that woke me up to that. I was at an enlightenment intensive, and I woke up one morning and saw this something, this program, do a scan. It scanned... I'm trying to think what the sequence was now. It scanned the body first to make sure everything was okay and that there were no aches and pains. It scanned my emotions, and then it scanned the immediate room around me, and then it scanned the horizon, you know, like what the day would look like. And I saw it do this scan of me. It was looking for problems that needed solving, looking for things that needed fixing. And I went, wow, I could see what it was doing. And, you know, in a way it's kind of sweet. It's like, it's looking, how can I protect Jacqueline today? Right. But it's, so it's well-intentioned, I guess, some of the time, but it's actually not helpful. It's actually not needed. And so I was able to see that it's that mechanism, that program, that voice is not me. And again, that came to me through grace. And what this guy said in this talk was, what's most helpful is to call it out. I'm not sure, I'm sure I took notes on it, but I'm not sure I can find them. Is to name it, right? In order to get rid of it, you must first learn to identify it. Just label whatever thought that is as a saboteur and let it go. He says we weaken the saboteur by exposing it and labeling it.
Mm.
So again, like, in the movie Revolver, you know, the more we learn to go, you ain't me, you know, it's like, oh man, you really messed that up. Next time you're going to have to blah, 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 blah. And this is what needs to happen now. You know, if we can do that, and you know, I often do this with the hands, right?
Mm-hmm.
And well, in fact, there was a week there, or two or a month, I carried around a helium balloon. And would attribute what was going on, you know, blah, 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 all that chatter that was telling me where to go and what to do and how to do it. I was attributing that to the balloon. And, you know, Michael Singer suggests that we personify that
David
voice.
David Hawkins did that. Did you know that, David Hawkins?
I did not.
Yeah, he did it. He did like a doll. I forget which book it was of his, but yeah, he did like a doll and he would sit and talk to the doll, you know. And I sometimes like will say, you know, I mean, I've read it. Whom are you speaking to, or what do you need? And then, of course, there's nothing there because it's all thought.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, intellectually, I know it experientially. But then, like, okay, what I'm seeing a lot of is the same feeling that you know, me as, you know, the truth of who I am knows that it's not me, but there has to be something grabbing me with this one feeling. Do you ever have one feeling and it just seems like this one feeling just is an energy that you just haven't been able to get close to? That's what it seems like.
Well, and those recurring thoughts and recurring patterns, I think, Sharon, are the ones that we really got to get out the pen and paper. You know, and do some kind of inquiry, root cause inquiry, Byron Katie's The Work, something to get under those, particularly the ones that keep coming back and keep coming back. But what you can do is continue to strengthen that muscle and say, I know this is not my thought. I know this is not my thought. Every time you see it, I understand this is the judge's thought or the saboteur's thought. It's not my thought. And that simple, like he was saying, building the muscles, that will help. That in itself helps to get that far enough away that you can look at it under a microscope, that you can begin to do the inquiry on it, I think.
Oh, I love that. Yes, yes. It's like a visual that you gave me.
Mm-hmm. Good, good, good. And right. I think, yeah, awesome. Don wanted to talk too. So when Sharon's through, then Don will take the mic. Thank you, Sharon.
I know I said this earlier during the gathering, but it just happened recently, and I feel like it bears like a direct correlation between the talk that we just had. Well, one of the ways I sabotage myself is just these mind movies of trying to think I know how things are going to go or how a certain person's going to act or how to fix a certain situation. So what came in for me was that I saw this little movie playing in my mind with three little characters. My mother, my brother, and a recent happening, I was playing that out. I was reviewing it. And then my little niece. And so all of these are images in my mind. So what happened was, is I noticed right when the movie was playing in my mind that all of a sudden my whole body was tensing up. Mm-hmm. And I could just feel, because previous to that mental movie, I was fine. I felt peaceful. I felt happy. And so that was when I really, really noticed the difference. I was like, and then suddenly there was just this moment right in the middle of the movie. It was just like, oh, this is how I do it. this is how I make misery. And I just sat with it and I could see the images. They were the creations of this mind. And then I reminded myself that the mind is a tool. It's not me. I am making up these images with the tool of my mind. So whether you want to call it a saboteur or however you want to think about it, this is a misery maker, but it's not to make an enemy. Cause I could see myself, if I just heard, oh, there's a saboteur, I could see the way this one previously would be, oh, almost like an enemy I want to take out. Like, but if I could just see, oh, it's just my mind. I have this gift, this tool of a mind to use while I'm here. It's not me, but it's a tool. And the sage is the one who knows how to wield the tool. And so the sage, the way he talks about the sage, reminds me of the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
If you remember, the Holy Spirit is the bridge. So really, ultimately, we're even beyond that. We're even beyond the sage, because what we are is the awareness that is beyond words. So it seems like if he's talking about the sage as this intelligence that is even beyond words, then yes, right on. So that's what I took away from that. And I just, that's how I'm applying it lately, as of what, just a couple days ago, where it came in so clearly. And that's, I feel like it just seemed like it lined up. It lined up, because if I can look at it, see how my mind, the way I'm using my mind. And if I wanted to use that word sabotage, that would be the same as what I said when I said, oh, that's how I make myself miserable. Because there's this inner realm here. This is like in my kingdom. This is like my inner world. And if I'm making it all crazy in there with the thoughts I'm thinking or these little movies I'm making in my mind, it's like, the second I realized, like, oh, that's how I'm doing it, in the same second, it was like, I could really feel like, oh, yeah, I don't really have to do that. So that's where that little tweak, like, oh, I'm sabotaging myself now. Oh, I see. I don't really have to do this if I don't want to.
Yes. Let me just say, that is key to what, that's why it's the separation from that is so key. I don't have to do this. These aren't my, as a course would say, my real thoughts. These are not my real thoughts. So I don't have to do that. Go ahead.
But I could see the difference this time as opposed to any other time, because before I'd try to give up thoughts and exchange them for positive thoughts. And yeah, well, the reason why I noticed for me that didn't work too well is because I was so identified with the mind thinking that's me. The way I disidentified from the mind, realizing is, oh, yes, the mind is a tool. I'm not a tool. I'm awareness. I'm beyond that. I use the tool. It's like going to your shed and saying, yeah, I'm a shovel. I'm a hammer. No, you're not. So if you think of the mind as like that, it's a shovel or a tool or a pickaxe or whatever, but you're not that. You use that. Then that's where we get to decide, do I want to use it or do I want it to use me? So. Letting go.
That's a course lesson. I rule the mind, which I alone must rule. Right?
And maybe that's where it came from, because we just had that lesson.
And I got to say this, Dawn, you are definitely doing inner Ramana. Everything seems to be coming, at least that's coming through me anyway, because I did it. I still do it all the time. You know, it's my book to go to, inner Ramana. And, you know, he just goes into it. That's the first time I ever thought of it as a tool. You know what I'm saying? And that we don't have to listen to a tool. Why would we? The tool's just like repeating stuff. And, you know, I just find myself to be an oxymoron. Like, I was sitting here today and I had this feeling and I thought, this keeps coming back. It must be trying to tell me something. You know, and I talked to it and I said, okay, I'm feeling you. And I just stayed with it and it did go away. But, you know, we'll see. You know, some of these things we get caught on, you know, it's, I guess it's just the idea behind that unconsciously, the fear of waking up. That's got to be that, right?
And the recent lesson I also learned, and it's also in that book, Awareness Games, don't try to fix yourself. You're not broken. Stop trying to fix yourself.
Yeah,
that is key. I didn't realize how much I was engaging that part, the same part of my mind, like in third grade when you're, it says, here is the problem and solve for whatever, solve for X. Well, that's the same part of my mind that I've been trying to fix this character named Dawn, but it doesn't work. It can't work because the real you isn't broken, and the other you that seems to be broken isn't you, so it doesn't need, there is no fixing needed either way.
And Dawn, the one that wants to fix is the judge, you know? Yeah, that's the one.
The judge is doing everything. The judge is the one responsible. Like, it's so, think about, like, what, really, it's like I'm talking about my oxymoron here, Sharon. You see, the judge is the same as a saboteur. They're doing the same thing, and it's thought, and it's ingenious. But you know what? It's like, okay, you ain't me. There you go. Better be
that. He actually said in that audio, be hypervigilant. Be hypervigilant. And he said, label the thought of saboteur and then let it go.
Yeah.
Rather than get involved in the story. And then he was talking, I saw my second page, he was talking about the sage perspective. And four of the things I wrote down, I think there were five, but empathize. But he said, feel compassion for yourself. Feel compassion for yourself. Explore. Be fascinated to discover. Kind of like that idea of the mystery. Innovate. And it reminds me of that part in A Course in Miracles where it's in the manual for teachers, I think, where it talks about when you're listening, kind of like I'm just saying from my own words, when you're listening to guidance, what will come through for you will be something completely out of the realm of your normal thinking. It will be so like gobsmacked kind of stuff that you know it's not of you. You know it's from, you're listening to the guidance. So I liked the word, you know, innovate, because the innovation doesn't come from my intellect. It comes from listening beyond that. And then the other one was activate. So there's that sense of, like verbing that Reverend Megan Billy have been talking about, where you're, or in Regina too. I mean, you know, all of you guys, just living life. I mean, living existence, living as much as possible, focusing attention on awareness. I mean, that's it. That's it. That's it. So yeah, but those were the ones. And Dawn, you said about noticing a physical sensation. He said, shift your attention to one physical sensation. Do that. I mean, shift it there. And then you know, kind of like be honest with yourself. How does that feel? I mean, is it something great? Is it, you know, something eternal? Is it something temporary? Is it something desirable? Is it something, you know, it can be a clue to what's going on, the circle of, you know, madness that goes on up there that he's calling another voice when it's still me. It's still just me. So at any rate, I'm giving up the mic.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank everybody. It was a fun discussion. It was a fun video. I love doing this. I love having you guys here. Thanks for letting me do it. And we'll see you next time.